It's The Naked Scientists with Dr. Chris and Dr. Helen. We're talking this week about the science of the sun and astrophysics. And to join us now, we have Stuart Clark and Chris Davis. Stuart Clark is an astrophysicist. He's also previously an editor of the journal Astronomy Now. And he's recently written a wonderful book, which is called The Sun Kings. And it tells an amazing story, which he's going to share with us in a second. And Chris Davis is a researcher at the Rutherford Appleton Laboratory over in Oxfordshire. And they're actually studying the sun up close and personal with an amazing mission involving some satellites, and he's going to be joining us as well. But first of all, let me introduce you to Stuart. Hi, Stuart. Thank you for coming in.
It's my pleasure.
So tell us about this story, because we view the sun as this highly predictable and stable thing. You know, you get up in the morning, it's always there. But the evidence is it's not as stable as we might think.
Well, indeed, the sun is a highly variable cauldron of the most intense magnetic activity. So if you go back in history, you can find times when there have been extraordinary events that have been that have taken place on the sun via its magnetic field. And as you say, the Sun Kings is about what appears to be the most violent of these storms in history, and that took place on September 2nd, 1859.
What happened?
Well, imagine this. Two-thirds of the Earth's skies erupt with the most incandescent, blood-red aurora, the kind of things that you see in the sky usually when you go up to the high polar latitudes.
So the whole sky just goes bright red like it's made of blood?
In this case, yes, that's what the most of the eyewitness reports suggest. And worse than that is that there were other times when there seemed to be bolts of white light flying upwards and exploding with sort of silent brilliance in the heavens. It was just the most amazing cataclysm that engulfed most of the Earth's skies.
This is the 1800s. People must have thought the Earth was coming to an end.
They had absolutely no idea what was going on at all. And there was a sinister side to this story as well, because at the time that the aurora lit the sky, so the telegraph network across the world went down. It stopped functioning, and it stopped functioning in the most spectacular of fashions. Electrical currents surged along the wires into the offices. The sparks flew from the equipment. Offices were set on fire. Some of the operators were stunned unconscious. The whole of the global communications network, as the telegraph was at the time, was taken down. And at the same time, every compass on the Earth went haywire. So in an instant, and for reasons unknown to anybody, global communications and navigations just stopped.
Did people have any clue as to what was going on? There must have been massive speculation. People must have thought, wow, the end of the Earth is nigh here.
Yet one person was in the right place at the right time, the kind of coincidence you couldn't get away with writing in fiction. And that person was an English amateur astronomer called Richard Carrington. And he was working in his observatory at Red Hill, and he was engaged in his mission was to study the sun for a full 11 years and chart the comings and goings of dark blemishes on the surface of the sun called sunspots. And it was known that the more sunspots there were on the sun, the more unreliable the compass readings were. And so there was this clue that somehow the sun was magnetic, and that that magnetism could reach out across space and affect the Earth.
So how did Carrington connect this amazing event you've been describing with the sunspots that were going on?
What happened was at just before noon on the 1st of September, he was looking at a massive sunspot about 10 times the diameter of the Earth, this sunspot, and he saw two brilliant beads of white light appear above the sunspot. He realised that this kind of explosion, for want of a better word, had certainly not been charted or recorded before. And as he traced this, it lasted for a few minutes and it passed across the top of the sunspot and then disappeared. Well, he went to try and find other astronomers to see if they'd seen something like this. And although he couldn't find instantly anybody else who had seen it. At the Kew Observatory in Richmond, they had magnetic needles studying the Earth's magnetic field, and at exactly the moment that Carrington saw his flare, so the magnetic needles had jumped. It was just as if the Earth's magnetic field had been struck by some mighty fist, or it was like a bell being struck by a hammer and it was still ringing. And that night, the magnetic needles continued to jitter and get stronger, and then suddenly the skies burst into these aurora.
How long did this phenomenon last for, with boats not knowing where they were going, people being electrocuted, offices catching fire?
Well, the Earth had been in the grip of magnetic squalls, for want of a better word, on and off for the best part of a week. And this one lasted over 24 hours.
So Chris Davis from the Rutherford Appleton, what was going on the Sun when all this was happening?
Sounds astonishing, doesn't it? Thanks, Stuart, for giving me the most exciting introduction I've ever had, I think. What happens, we now know, is that the Sun has a magnetic field, but the Sun is a fluid, and so unlike the Earth, which is a solid body, when the Sun rotates, it churns and twists that magnetic field up with it. And the Sun also has a stream of particles coming away from the Sun, called the solar wind, so that part of the Sun is blowing out into space the whole time. Now, when you twist and wrap up the magnetic field, which is what is happening during the solar cycle, you actually store energy in the magnetic field because you're stretching it. It's like winding the propeller on a rubber band on a model aircraft. You're storing energy by twisting it and stretching it. And when that magnetic field is twisted and contorted and can take no more, the magnetic field reconfigures in some way. That can release energy in the form of light, which is the flare. The flare is given off by particles as they're accelerated very rapidly during that process. And it flings very hot, energized, electrified gas into space along with the Sun's magnetic field. And, of course, if that arrives at the Earth, it can interact with the Earth's magnetic field and allow that material to interact with the Earth's atmosphere, which is what causes the aurora. At the same time, electrical particles flow in the upper atmosphere because there's very little resistivity in the upper atmosphere, and so these particles can flow very readily. Those induce currents in the telegraph wires that are on the ground, and that causes surges of electricity in those, which we have heard of cause such a disaster at the time.
So, Stuart, as people experienced this, how did their understanding build from 1859 when this event actually happened, so they began to get towards understanding what they'd experienced?
Well, it was a long process, and many of the people at the time, their first thoughts were just utter disbelief. They had become extremely used to the idea that gravity was the only force that could really communicate itself across space. And here was the what seemed like the suggestion that magnetism could do the same. This was the flare, the Carrington flare, and the subsequent magnetic storm was seen before they even had a working theory of electromagnetism. That came along with James Clerk Maxwell. And here's the fascinating point about this, is Maxwell's field theories seemed to prove categorically once and for all that this magnetic energy couldn't come from the Sun, because the Sun couldn't radiate enough energy to cause the aurora and the movement of the compass needles that were being seen on the Earth. That only became unpacked in the early decades of the 20th century, when people started to realise that particles could carry electrical or magnetic fields, and that you didn't have to radiate huge waves of the energy all throughout space. In fact, you could sort of send them in specific directions, like little magnetic cannonballs as such.
And Chris, have we had anything similar to this happening since the 1859 Carrington event?
That's certainly the biggest storm. There is another storm more recently, in 1989, I think, where there was a storm which, of course, had similar effect, large auroral disturbances and induced currents, not in the telegraph system, of course, because by this time we're not using the telegraph, but we did have a national grid. And those countries such as Canada and Alaska, whose national grid stretches over large areas, have long cables, and it induced currents in these, which again blew up transformers and large areas of Quebec, for example, without electricity for many days.